Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to a special edition of Rock This Town Radio with TC. I am your host, TC Clark, and along with my production assistant, Cuddles the Cat, we're coming to you from our Bloomfield studio in the 412. That's Pittsburgh, PA. Tonight's show is supposed to be the last installment of our celebration of Women's History Month, and it's going to feature Women Who Rock, members of the Hall of Fame. But 2 days ago, on Friday, March 25th, we lost one of the greatest drummers and rock personalities of the last 30 years, Taylor Hawkins of the Foo Fighters. And this show will be dedicated to his memory and all the wonderful moments and music that he contributed to rock and roll.
with Foo Fighters on tour in South America. The band was in Colombia last night to perform at the Estéreo Picnic Festival. 1 hour before the band was scheduled to take the stage and perform, an announcement was made that stunned fans, letting them know that the show was not going to happen due to the death of Taylor Hawkins.
So as most of you know, this evening, the Foo Fighters had to cancel their headlining show. Some of you may not know that it's because their drummer Taylor Hawkins just passed away.
Fans just an hour away from watching the Foo Fighters perform were obviously stunned and heartbroken by the news they had just received. Festival organizers also began lighting candles on stage and playing Foo Fighters for the crowd. Foo Fighters fans in the audience could be heard singing along to the music. At a nearby hotel, fans gathered where Taylor Hawkins was staying, where they began placing candles and paying tribute to the musician. From these local media reports, fans in the crowd waiting to see Foo Fighters were obviously very emotional, having learned this news. Foo Fighters posted the following statement about Taylor's passing, writing, "The Foo Fighters family is devastated by the tragic and untimely loss of our beloved Taylor Hawkins. His musical spirit and infectious laughter will live on with all of us forever. Our hearts go out to his wife, children, and family, and we ask that their privacy be treated with the utmost respect in this unimaginably difficult time."
Oliver Taylor Hawkins was born on February 17th, 1972 in Fort Worth, Texas. He turned 50 just last month. His family moved to Laguna Beach, California when he was four, and Taylor graduated from local high school there in 1990.
Hey, this is Taylor Hawkins, and you're watching Rock Sound. I play drums with the Foo Fighters, and these are my early years. Check it out. My first band practice ever was, I think I was 10 years old. I think it was in my room. We met this girl that could play guitar. We named her, we called her Peppermint Patty because she had freckles and red hair. And my buddy, John Davison, who's the singer in Yes now, was playing, I believe, bass, maybe. And I think that we were trying to learn either What I Like About You by the Romantics or maybe Save It for Later by the English Beat. And I'm sure we were sounding horrible. First ever show that I ever played was at my elementary school, Top of the World School, in the multipurpose room. And I believe it was the jazz band. And that was the first time I actually played drums in front of people. And this great teacher, Mr. Bottorff, he was our music teacher. He knew I was a rock drummer and I wanted to be, and I'd only been playing drums for 6 months, but he taught me, and we played a song called Cute, which is an old jazz standard. Drum solo. And I just knew that's what I wanted to do forever, play Cute. My Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, really two stand out as being super duper important in my early years as a musician, trying to be one anyways. And that would be Roger Taylor from Queen, who was just so cool, so awesome, and always looked cool and always had a cool drum set and sang. He was the guy, and that was the first rock band besides like the Beatles, listening to the Beatles and whatever, like with my parents when I was younger. It's the first like rock band that I like bought their records and read the back of them and all that, and so I decided I wanted to be Roger Taylor. And then my brother turned me on to the Police around the same time. This is like 1982, 81, 82. And Stuart Copeland, their drummer, is a huge, important influence on me as far as drumming and being creative. He was so creative. There was, like, no one like him. He really was redefining drumming at that time. So, I mean, those two were my first childhood drum heroes, if you will. I've managed to meet both of them, and I know them both fairly well, actually, and they're both lovely people. Roger's great. He's been like a mentor to me in a lot of ways through the years. If I've ever had any questions about, like, well, should I do this or should I do that? I mean, what do you think, Roger? What would you do? You know, he's quick to give me his opinion and his advice, and it's usually pretty much on the money. And then Stuart's someone I met a little later, but he's always been wonderful to me. And he knows how much I love his drumming. And we've actually done BBC shows together and stuff like that. We've done a lot of fun little things together. And he's a dear friend. I mean, as well as another one of my mentors. So I was lucky in that those two guys who were so important to me as a forming musician, drummer, have been so gracious to me with their time.
After high school, Taylor played with a local band in Orange County and had a brief stint with Sass Jordan's band. In 1995, he was hired to be the drummer for Alanis Morissette's tour supporting her skyrocketing album, Jagged Little Pill, on the Can't Not World Tour. Taylor appeared in the videos for You Oughta Know, All I Really Want, and You Learn. This is a sound clip from Billboard's Women in Music Awards show in 2019 when Taylor presented Morissette.
Well, Taylor Swift just arrived, and she looks absolutely amazing. Did you see her?
Yeah, that's the Taylor that people care about.
Let me introduce you. This is Taylor Hawkins of Foo Fighters, of course, and we do care about you too, Taylor. Don't worry.
Yes.
You're honoring Alanis Morissette.
Yes, tonight. I am.
Well, talk to me about your friendship with her and what.
Well, I was lucky enough to get the gig playing with Alanis when I was 23 or something like that back in 1995, and I had met her manager Scott, and he told me. I have this girl, I'm managing this girl, and she's making this record, and so I met her not far from here at the Pantages Theater.
Wow.
Where I was playing with another lady, but and she said, I have this record, and maybe you play drums, maybe, you know,
maybe.
And that was it, and it was like 3 months went by, and then I get a call, we're doing tryouts, I go and I try out, and I got the gig. Thank you, Alanis. Yeah, and so we started rehearsing, but I got this three songs on a cassette. It was back in the day.
Back in the day.
Yeah. And I heard You Oughta Know, and I heard You Learn, and these three or four, just like no question.
Yeah.
Going to be, I just knew it.
Knew it.
You knew it right away. And so we started rehearsing, and then this first song came out, and it just went completely bananas.
So you saw her go from being no one to someone.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think she'd had a little bit of success in Canada, but, I mean, no one knew who she was in America. And then, yeah, pretty much obscurity. And to see her go from, like, zero to, like, 1,000. And I'm telling you, like, You Oughta Know came out, and within, like, a week, it was just, like, bananas.
Well, it's different now, too, or it's different. It was different then than it is now, where,
well,
like,
yeah.
You know, in that sense. How was it, you know, working with her, and what's maybe something you learned from her? You guys, like, maybe can share, like, a story.
Well,
something.
You know, she was young, and
yeah.
I was young, and she was younger than me, and she had to become this sort of, like, boss of this massive industry, like, within a month. And she did it very gracefully. As a musician, she gave all of us a lot of space. And, I mean, I said it before, I'll say it again, I would, you know, destroyed her songs by putting all sorts of crazy drum stuff all over it. But she dug it, and I don't know, she was really open to that. And she was, you know, she was like, she's an artist.
That's awesome.
She's an artist, first and foremost. But giving, and she gave us a lot of space to be a cool band. And, within that, and then I watched her just become this like amazing front person. You know?
Awesome. Well, good luck tonight. I'm excited that you get to be a part of this. It's cool that you guys have such a history.
I need the luck on the speech.
You got this.
Not my usual.
Hey, look, you just killed this interview.
Yeah, literally.
So you're good to go. Thank you so much. Have fun tonight.
My pleasure.
And we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
That was Alanis Morissette with Taylor Hawkins on the drums from a 1995 show in London. He worked with her through 1997. Meanwhile, in 1997, the Foo Fighters were working on their second studio album in Seattle when Dave Grohl and their drummer had a disagreement and the drummer left the band. Foo Fighters went back to L.A. and finished the album with Grohl handling the drum parts. He called Taylor Hawkins, who was an acquaintance, and asked him if he knew anyone who might want to be their drummer for the Foo Fighters. He never thought that Hawkins would leave Alanis Morissette since they were a bigger act than the Foo Fighters at the time. And Grohl was quite surprised when Taylor said he wanted to be the drummer, citing his desire to play in a rock band instead of a supporting act. He officially joined the band and went on tour with them to support the new album, the second one, The Color and the Shape. His first appearance on a Foo Fighters studio album was 1999's There Is Nothing Left to Lose.
Hook me. Dave, I don't care what Taylor says. It's got to be intimidating being in Foo Fighters. You were in the sense that you were the drummer in Nirvana, and you're such a good drummer yourself. I'm sure, Taylor, you sit there and have nightmares that he's going to be critical. And is he critical?
I think because Dave was the drummer, and the drummer is, like, as you say, oh, who cares about the drummer? You know, and that's the hot seat. And if the gig goes bad, it's the drummer's fault.
The band's only as good as his drummer.
Yeah, band's only as good as drummer, and only as bad as their drummer as well. So, like, so Dave, he's not a, never a dick about it, really, honestly. I can honestly say that he's never a dick about it. But it's intimidating, there's no question. When I joined the band, I was super intimidated because, you know, I met Axl Rose the first time, and he said, what's it like being the drummer for the greatest drummer of the 90s? I'm like, oh. Hard.
Did he really?
Yeah, that's what he said to me. I was like, whoa, Axl Rose. And he said that. And I was like, oh, my God. It's hard.
Yeah. And Dave, when you write a new album, and we're here celebrating your new album, we're going to get to all that. But when you write a new album, when you sit down with the band and you say, okay, now we're going to record this stuff, are you open to their changes and their new ideas? Or is it that you just say, look, guys, I've heard this in my head already. I know how I want it to go.
Like the first, I don't know, 5-7 years of the band, I was like, like, it sounds, it's got to sound like this. It's got to sound like this. And then I finally realized, like, what am I doing? You know, this album in particular, I was like, I'm walking out of the room. I'm the one thing getting in the way of a good Foo Fighters record. Like, I'm the guy that's, like, hovering over the producer and the engineer, like, no, do this, do this. And I finally realized, like, wait, I'm probably the band's biggest problem. Like, I should just get the fuck out of the room and let the band do the thing that the band does. And then come in and be happily surprised, like, oh, my God, I never imagined that. I never thought of that. And ultimately, that's what, like, an album like this, it goes beyond my imagination in a lot of ways because I just got the fuck out of the room for a couple minutes and let everybody do their thing, you know?
I'm a one-way motorway. I'm a road.
Not only did the Foo Fighters find a great drummer in Taylor Hawkins, they also brought on board an incredible rock and roll singer. And maybe even more importantly, he became a best friend, a brother to Dave. The chemistry of the band became damn near perfect when Taylor found comfort in his role as not only the drummer, but as a singer in the band, and with his friendship he forged with Dave.
Do not get arrested.
Okay, here's
exactly.
The, me and him were on, we got mopeds down on the Gold Coast like everybody does, goes around. Like, it was great fun. So we spent a couple days down there before the show. Show day comes, it's a beautiful day. We took the scooters. I think you even rode it up on stage like you were in Judas Priest for the first song, didn't you? And then, so afterwards, we stayed, we hung, we partied. Dave had was overserved. And
it was a very irresponsible barman.
There was a very irresponsible barman backstage who overserved Dave. And then me and Dave were riding home on our scooters. And I wasn't hammered, actually. I had a bag of weed in my pocket. But he was hammered. And we both got stopped in one of those police
sobriety checkpoint.
I passed. Dave failed. So Dave had to go to jail. I took my scooter home, got in the cab, got his scooter, took it back, told our tour manager to go get Dave out of jail. Next day, Dave got out of jail.
You got a new rug, T?
No, I got the same old one.
Crap.
Same old black rug.
So Taylor, besides being the best fucking drummer I've ever seen in my life, I think he's great.
Much too kind, sir.
You know I love you, bro.
Oh, God. You know I love you too, buddy.
I mean, I really love you, man.
I love you.
Okay.
All right. Let's do this, fucker. Not you being the fucker, but the song being the fucker.
All right, fucker.
I didn't mean you being
one,
the
fucker. 1, 2, 3, 4,
yeah, I didn't mean
fucker.
You the fuck. I didn't mean you being, you know. 1, 2,
Mother's
three.
Brothers.
Four.
Thank you.
The band saw no ceiling for how big they could get. Dave and Taylor became all-world rock stars. Wherever they turned up, anywhere on the planet, you could be sure that their big smiles and knack for having fun together was on full display. You'd be hard-pressed to find two band members who have ever been closer than Dave Grohl and Taylor Hawkins.
He plays drums like John Bonham, plays rhythm guitar like Pete Townsend, and he writes these amazing, great pop songs. Yeah.
Talking about
how great you are.
Oh, really?
Oh.
What'd you say?
Oh, God, he's
really
genius.
He always watching, it's always genius. Fucking watching.
See, told you.
We're a huge fan of Queen. We fucking love it.
Who doesn't like Queen? Everybody likes Queen.
Sometimes we do a Queen song every now and then. I like playing Queen song. You want to do it? Should we do a Queen song? That's right, Rufus, you little shit. Everybody say hi, Rufus! Rufus is gonna play drums on this song. Because his dad played drums on this song. We're doing Under Pressure, motherfucker!
Under Pressure.
Come on, Ruf!
Rufus, you're under pressure right now.
Hit us with it. Here it comes. Come on, Ruth. Here it comes.
We'll be right back.
Hey, hey, hey! Let's hear it for Rufus right now. God damn! I love you, Rufus. We've known that little shit since he was this fucking big. Look at him now.
When you broke your leg on stage with Foo Fighters, you go to the hospital, and the first guy I read who visited you was Prince Harry.
I mean, the first guy to visit me was actually the drummer of Coldplay.
Really?
He lived down the street. Like, I was getting texts from everybody, like, did you just fucking fall off the... Are you okay? And so the guy from Coldplay, Will, came by and hung out with me in the hospital. I was still clicking the fucking morphine button.
Wow.
Coldplay. And then fucking... I was staying at this hotel thing, and Prince Harry was like, hey, I have a gift for you. Well, come say hi.
Really?
Yeah, and it's funny because he came over to hang out. It was this big hotel suite. And, like, he's so chill that, like, you know, my nanny was there, my kids were there. They didn't know he was the fucking Prince of England. They were just like, hey, your friend is here. And yeah. He brought me this thing to hold my iPad so I could, like, just watch movies and shit. And it was great. He's cool.
Do you hang out with Prince Harry? I mean, what has life become for you? I don't even know. Are you hanging with Prince Harry?
We have hung out with him before.
Really? And what do you guys do?
Taylor in the face one time. How hard was that smack in the face?
Pissed me off, actually.
Why, you didn't bow to him or something? What happened?
No,
you didn't bow?
We literally were doing something similar to this, but not similar to this. We were playing somewhere in England, and we had just flown over and, like, literally had like 2 hours sleep, and we were doing a show in some ambassador's backyard or something. And he walked in, Harry, and, you know, a bunch of his people around him, and he goes, how you doing? And I'm like, I can't wake up, so tired, I gotta play, I can't wake up. He just goes, bam.
What the fuck?
And I went, you motherfucker. And then it's like two guys are like right there. And he's like, you awake now or something like that? I'm like, yeah. Like, I mean, you know, it's fucking.
Wow.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, I got slapped in the face by the prince. I mean, that's okay, really, if you think about it. But at the moment, I was like, just fucking slap me, dude.
Of course, the Foo Fighters' original music is legendary rock. They play rock and roll as rock and roll should be played. However, their live covers add so much to the concert-goer's experience of seeing a Foo Fighters show. They never hesitate to tell anyone that they are the biggest Queen fans, and you are sure to hear one of their songs covered at the gigs. But they also like to hit their audiences with unexpected songs, like this Pink Floyd cover. It was at the Reading Festival in 2012, and it's sung by Taylor.
Tell me something new than your sunshine. is this not what you expected to see? If you wanna find out what's behind this gold line,
almost like you meet couples or, you know, people in relationships where they're just like, rah, 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 but you know they'll stay together forever. Mm. We're not like that. We've never really had that creative friction.
So this is a genuine friendship.
No, we're just fucking great actors.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the best role I've ever played.
Uh-huh.
Taylor's friend.
Yep. That's not an easy one.
No, I deserve an Academy Award for this
seriously.
Shit.
Can't you see I'm waiting? there's a lot of great things in the documentary, back and forth, but there's one moment at the very end of the documentary. I thought it was over. I'm just about to turn it off when actually there's a snippet of you, Dave, saying, if I thought the Foo Fighters was ever going to be this big, I'd have come up with a better name for the band. Are you not impressed with the name Foo Fighters?
You know, I'm really happy with what's happened over the last 16 years. We're really lucky, and I love being in this band. But honestly, Foo Fighters is like the stupidest band name you've ever heard. It's a horrible name.
What's with the language tonight?
I don't know. It's a I mean, the reason why I called it Foo Fighters is because the first thing that I recorded was I did it by myself, and I played all the instruments. I played drums and guitar and bass and sang, and I made this cassette, but I didn't want people to know it was me because I didn't want people to think like, oh, that guy from Nirvana is trying to start another band. So I just called it Foo Fighters because it sounded like a group of people.
Right.
Like, yeah. And I had read it in a UFO book or something like that. And but it stuck and it stayed all this time. And I just can't believe if I knew that we would be here on your show 16 years later.
You know you've made it when you're here. Someday Conan's going to be on TBS, and I'll be there. Did you? Now, okay, well, Taylor, what do you think of the band name?
See, I thought it was really cool.
You liked it.
Yeah, so I must be really a dipshit. But
sorry,
there are band names that you like. What do you guys think of the quintessential cool band names?
Like Rush.
Queen.
When I was a kid.
Queen.
The
Rush.
Ramones.
Ramones is a great band name. Styx. Air Supply. Josie and the Pussycat.
Myself, I call them the greatest rock band in the last 30 years, but that name's a little long. One of my favorite live videos of the Foo Fighters on YouTube and on a concert DVD that I own is from June of 2008 when they played at Wembley Stadium in London. They started their encore with just Dave and Taylor on the stage, and Dave introduced Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin to join them. Dave got behind the drum kit, Taylor grabbed the mic, and here's what the 60,000 people who were lucky enough to be in that stadium heard and saw. We'll be right back. February 15th, just about 6 weeks ago, Dave and Taylor were guests on Sirius XM's Howard Stern Show promoting their new comedy movie, horror movie, Studio 666, and shooting the shit as they like to do with Howard. It was just a month before they would head out to South America and Lollapalooza, Argentina, and what would be Taylor's last show.
The last time you guys were here, I was talking about the Foo Fighters and who is going to put you into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Dave, you said, I got someone, but I don't want to say it here. I want it to be a surprise and blah, 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 blah. And then it turned out you got Paul McCartney to induct you into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which you really can't do better than that. How does it come about? Do you call him and say, Paul, please do this? Or do you have somebody else do it? I'd be too embarrassed to ask myself.
Yeah, we didn't call him personally. I think somebody else did it. But we know him. I mean, you know, he's a really sweet guy, and we've known him for a long time. So I think he agreed to do it because he wanted to do it for us because we're friends. But we didn't make the personal call, no. Yeah, because that would have been awkward. That would have been weird.
Right. And you don't give him any kind of guidelines about what to say. You don't feed him any information. Whatever he says, he says, and that's it.
Paul, okay, now come here. Get over here, Paul. No, no, no. Come here.
Here's what you're going to say.
And if you fucking say this, Jesus. No, I thought it was neat the way he did the speech, and he sort of made the parallels between Dave being in Nirvana and that being this crazy tornado. And then out of that, Dave found his way to the Foo Fighters, and we slowly kind of made our way up. And he said it's sort of a similar story, like the Wings from the Beatles. And I always kind of thought of us like the Wings a little bit. And I
You've said it on the show. You've said it. You guys are the Wings of grunge.
Yeah, and Dave, I was kidding. But
I know, but it was a funny line. It was a good line.
Probably.
You said it on this show, yeah. Well, Taylor,
I even think Dave's songwriting and the Wings stuff is similar. I mean, it's good song structures, and it's a new – I mean, you know, for Dave to come out of Nirvana and have something as successful as it is, I mean, most people just don't get a second act like that, you know?
They don't. They don't. I've said that to Dave. Dave said, no, there have been bands who do it. You know, Clapton, of course, went to Cream. But Nirvana was so big. And Paul was right, Dave. It was a solid
speech. It's funny. I never really considered any of that stuff, like, this is what he was saying, you know?
Apparently I did.
Taylor put a lot of thought into it. I think Taylor wrote the fucking speech for Paul.
Paul, get over here, man. Get over here, motherfucker. I got something to say.
I thought it was very magnanimous of you in your Rock and Roll Hall of Fame acceptance speech. You lobbied for the following people to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. George Michael, Jane's Addiction.
Yeah.
Boy, were you right on with Jane's Addiction. Come on. And Soundgarden, of course.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you have to remember, dude, if you remember back in 1988, 89, when Jane's came out and then Soundgarden not soon after, that was like a real, like, oh, man, there's going to be good rock music, because it was getting to the point where rock music was kind of not, it's just, like, I liked Van Halen and early rap, but it was getting kind of... Like, is there going to be something good coming? And as soon as you heard Jane's Addiction, and as soon as you heard Soundgarden, you were like, yes, there is. There's rock on the horizon.
It was a seismic shift in the way music was being produced and heard. It was...
Absolutely. It was getting gutsy and interesting and, you know, not just about partying or whatever. And then George Michael, I just think that guy's got the best voice of all
No offense to George Michael. Jethro Tull before George Michael. I don't understand that one. No.
No, that's pretty trippy. Yeah. I think King Crimson should be in. Ian McDonald died this week. King Crimson.
Let me honor them.
In the court of the Crimson King.
In the court of the Crimson King. Love that.
Talk about background vocals.
Don't fuck with me. I'm a rock star over here.
I want one of those effects pedals.
On March 8, 2022, the Foo Fighters took the stage in Buenos Aires, Argentina, as the headliner for that country's Lollapalooza. During their set, Dave and Taylor switched places, Dave behind the drum kit and Taylor took the mic. And what transpired was not only an amazing cover of Queen's Somebody to Love, but an epic performance by Taylor Hawkins. A week later, Taylor would be found dead in his hotel room in Bogota, Colombia. There's an old saying in music, in sports, and really in anything where someone is performing, do it like it's your last time. Taylor gave that kind of performance, and sadly, it would be his last.
On the drums tonight. Look at that motherfucker. Taylor.
David.
Listen.
Yes.
Dan, light them up. Let me see all the people right now. See? They love you, man.
Feel it.
Okay. Here's the thing. Taylor Hawkins, best fucking drummer in the world. Taylor Hawkins, best fucking singer in the world. Taylor Hawkins is going to come down and sing a song for you tonight.
That was awesome, Samira.
Everybody dance now.
You guys want to hear Dave Grohl play the fucking drums? The best part about getting to be the lead singer of the Foo Fighters just for one song is I really do have the greatest rock and roll drummer on the planet Earth. Play drums for me.
You're not gonna get
fired. He ain't cheap. He ain't cheap, but he's worth it. You're gonna get your solo, don't you fucking worry. Dave Grohl. I'm not gonna do that to you anymore. You want to play a Queen song, Dave? No? Oh, there it is. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave fucking Grohl on the drum fucking shit. Give us more. We want more from you. You haven't given us enough.
Hawkins on the drums tonight. Look at that motherfucker.
First joined the band. I mean, we were like in love with each other. Like the minute the first time we had a beer together, we're like, we're gonna be best friends for the rest of our lives. And it's true. Like we still really, we're like this. Yeah.
Oliver Taylor Hawkins, 1972 to 2022. Thanks for the music. Rest in peace, rock star. As we always do at this point of this Rock This Town Radio at TC, let's see who has birthdays this week. Mariah Carey is 52 today. On Monday, Reba McEntire will be 58. A happy birthday on Tuesday to Canadian one-hit wonder Terry Jacks of the Seasons in the Sun fame. He will be 76. Eric Clapton will be 77 on Wednesday. Also on Wednesday, Tracy Chapman will be 58, and Nora Jones turns 43. On Thursday, Shirley Jones of the Partridge Family fame will be 88. She grew up just down the road from here in Pittsburgh in Charleroi, PA. In 1952, she was named Miss Pittsburgh. Herb Alpert will be 85 on Thursday. On Friday, Jimmy, 74. A happy heavenly birthday to Marvin Gaye on Saturday, born April 2nd, 1939. He was shot and killed by his father in 1984, the day before his 45th birthday. Leon Russell was born on April 2nd, 1941. He passed away in 2016. And Emmylou Harris will be 75 on Saturday. I saved three birthdays, as usual, to finish off the music for the episode, starting with the Moody Blues drummer, Graham Edge.
hear the drums echoing tonight. She hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, hurry boy, it's waiting there for you. Longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right. Sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become. Thank you.
Jane's Addiction, live at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City, featuring founding member, songwriter, and frontman Perry Farrell, who will be 63 on Tuesday. Not only did he front one of the most important bands of the last 40 years, he also created Lollapalooza in 1991 as a retirement festival for the band. It quickly became one of the world's largest and most popular annual music festivals, and Perry is still involved in organizing it. And coincidentally, that was Taylor's last performance, was at Lollapalooza, Argentina. We heard Toto with one of their signature songs, Africa, and drums played by one of the three founding brothers of the group, Jeff Porcaro. Through his studio sessions work away from Toto, he is considered one of the most recorded musicians of all time, having played drums on hundreds of albums and thousands of sessions. Jeff was born on April 1, 1954, and he died at the age of 38 from an accidental poisoning, spraying insecticide. We started our birthday set with Wildest Dreams by the Moody Blues and founding member and drummer Graham Edge. Graham was born on March 30th, 1941 in the UK and died last November 11th at the age of 80 from metastatic cancer. You know what? We got to do this show over. I forgot to turn on my on-air light. I guess we're good. All right, never mind. Okay, it's concert season, and coming up on next week's show, I'll be playing 12 songs from 12 bands that I will hopefully be seeing over the next several months. I have tickets, but I still say hopefully with fingers crossed because cancellations have become a little too common in the last couple of years. I already lost one this year, although they canceled their own tour to hook up on a support act for another tour. Bastards. One of the bands that I have tickets for is Foo Fighters on May 14th here in Pittsburgh. I'm certain that's not going to happen, but I'm still going to include them on my playlist next week. On Wednesday, I'll be seeing Cullen Hay, founder and frontman of Australian band Men at Work. And they'll be at the Carnegie Library Music Hall here in Pittsburgh. There are a few upcoming Deviant Legion podcasts this week, hosted by our good friend and the man who made my show possible, Carl Caper. I think I hear him snorting in the background. Say you, Carl.
Snort, snort, snort.
Yeah, I heard it. Last week you were scratching on the door, now you're snorting behind my shoulder.
Well,
all right,
how
you doing?
God, it's basically being paid in the ass to you ever so often. I mean,
we've
been doing that for
what?
We're not even going to say how long.
Oh, God, yeah. So did you learn anything tonight, Carl?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, you know, it's a shame that Taylor passed away. I'm not a huge Foo Fighters fan, but I didn't realize he was with Alanis.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Just, you know, I was doing some research on him, and amazing amount of work. And of course, you know, with him and Dave Grohl and their friendship, you know, it's a great loss. And for you to pull this show together so quickly, because you did this extremely quickly. When did he die? 2 days ago?
He died Friday, and yesterday I probably about 5 hours on it. I'm thinking maybe another hour today.
Listen, you did a great show, and you did a great tribute.
Thank you
very
much.
Very much so.
Yeah, I thought some of those interviews were pretty cool.
There's a reason you're on this network, because you actually do really good work.
Ah, great.
I'm so proud of you. Seriously.
All right. Where do I send the check?
I'll give you my address later.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, just give me your bank account and I'll directly deposit it, okay?
Okay, that'll work.
All right. What do you got for us, buddy?
Well, I don't have too much. We got a lot of stuff in the cauldron that's bubbling. But right now, what I can tell you is on Tuesday, we are going to do a trauma retrospective with a very good friend and basically one of our guest a panelist who had been on many shows. His name is Patrick Crane. He's out of Oklahoma City. And Patrick was supposed to be on a podcast last week, but then he contacted me and he said, I got this gig that they gave to me where I'm going to be hosting and doing a Q&A with the founder of Troma. And so, of course, you know, you know who that is, right? Do you know who we're talking about?
No.
No. So Troma is, you know, gave us all sorts of Kabuki Man, you know, Sergeant Kabuki Man, and of course the Toxic Avenger and that sort of thing.
Right.
And the head of that is Lloyd Kaufman. Lloyd's been in the business for well over 50 years. He started doing independent work in the early 70s. So, I mean, it's amazing that here Patrick was with Lloyd Kaufman and hosting an event. So I'm sure he has lots of tales to tell. We're also going to be focusing on Troma's new release that they just released, and it's called Shakespeare Shitstorm. So that should be a lot of fun.
The title's fun just by itself.
Absolutely.
You could keep saying that over and over, and you know, you'll be laughing.
Oh, Shakespeare Shitstorm, Shakespeare Shitstorm.
Not now, Carl.
Could do a laugh on it. Okay, I'll shut up now. And then what I will tell you is this. The date is not completely set yet, but in mid-April, we're going to be welcoming back a very good friend of the podcast, and that's author Joe Lansdale. Now, if you don't know who the name is, Joe Lansdale wrote the screenplay and also the story that it's based on of Bubba Hotep. He also wrote the series of books of Happen Leonard, which was made into a TV show. He also wrote the book and the screenplay to a film called Cold in July, which is a great noir, Texas noir. He also does some producing. Last time we had him on, he executive produced a Western slash horror film called The Pale Door, which I just watched. That's on Shudder, and it's really good. I really liked it. And I'll be talking to him about that. But we're going to have him on in August. Now, I also think next week.
April.
We will be, I mean, not August. Thank you. April, yeah. Not August. Next week also, we will be doing a commentary watch, hopefully, on Little Murders. And we're going to be introducing our person that works basically with our logos and is developing the website and everything like that. His name is Josh Buckland, and Josh will be doing that commentary watch with me. I just have to make sure that it's either Wednesday or Thursday, but we'll be doing that next week too. So that's what we've got.
We got something coming up before that. How about next Saturday?
Well, yes.
Didn't mention that.
We are also going to start April, you know, since it's only going to be a couple of days past April Fool's Day. And Rachel and Down the Rabbit Hole, we're going to be doing stand-up comedians and comic skits on our Rachel Down the Rabbit Hole, and that's this coming Saturday, a week from yesterday.
Yep,
and we'll be
8
doing
o'clock
that at 8 o'clock.
That's Carl, Rachel, and I. So,
and do you have a couple people you know you're going to mention on that one?
Yeah, I think we're going to be hearing from Sam Kinison on my end, Lewis Black, George Burns and Gracie Allen, National Lampoon, maybe Fire Sign Theater, Cheech and Chong. So, Yeah, I'm going to hit the list where it's pretty good. And like we were talking, a lot of them are short, so we're going to be actually getting more material in this time. So,
you know, and I think some of mine are going to be a little longer than that, so I won't have as many. But it'll be a lot of fun. I can tell you one for sure we're going to do with me is Dick Gregory. Yeah. You may not know that name, but I'll explain that to you later.
You should know it. Okay.
You should know. All right, Carl. So that's what we've got so far, TC.
Well, thanks for stopping in. And you can find all of those great podcasts right here on Deviant Legion Network on Blog Talk Radio. Listen live or find any of our shows in the episode archives whenever it works for you. You have some friends who might want to hear this show we did tonight. I'll post links again so people can come back and listen to it. Check out my YouTube channel at TCC77 for concert footage that I've shot at rock shows around the country. TCC77 on YouTube. And please keep Ukraine in your thoughts and pray for the country and its people if you're into that sort of thing. On behalf of my production assistant, Cuddles the Cat, I'm TC Clark, and I hope that you had as much fun as I did tonight, and that you have a great rockin' week. As us cool cats say, we'll catch you on the flip side. Thank you.